कार्ये प्रवर्तते आच्छदये बुभुक्षं च तथा योति बुभुक्षितः अनेनादिष्टिते देहे यथा सर्वज्ञदायया तथा स्वत्मन्यदिष्ठानात् सर्वत्रैवं भविष्यति ग्लानिर्विलुण्ठिका देहे तस्यश्च ज्ञानतस्सति तदुन्मेष विलुप्तं चेत् कुतः सा स्याद् हेतुका
Good evening, good afternoon, and welcome, welcome, welcome to our first class in the auspicious practice of surfing reality with meditation, contemplation, and the wisdom of this extraordinary text, the Spandakarikas, the stanzas on vibration. This is a teaching that, as many of you know, has really deeply transformed my life. I've been studying it for, 30 years now. And every time I look into it, it kindles some new realization. And I know that there are some of you in this class, maybe more than some of you, who have studied this text with me or read it on your own. And if you have, I think you know what I mean. I've called it Surfing Reality, because when I really look at what Tantra and Tantric practice and a text like the Stanzas on Vibration reveal to us is really the gift for moving through the seams of reality to actually flow in connection with our own freedom, even as we act and respond to events and relationships in the normal course of things. And also, and I do think this is one of the mysteries of Tantra, surfing reality means that you know how to act with the blessings of time itself. That is, to understand timing, to understand when reality is behind you, when the flow of things is opening to you, and when the flow of things is closing to you. And one of the great gifts of understanding the nature of Shakti, of the nature of Spanda, is that you begin to realize what this really means, what it really means to flow. Spandakarikas, again, comes from a northern Indian tantric tradition. It comes from some period between the 8th and 10th century, and it's also a very key text for understanding other non-dual traditions such as Taoism. The text that, you know, the popular text that to me best expresses in a poetic way the truth at the heart of the Spandakarikas is actually the Taoist book, the I Ching, which many of us learn to use as a kind of fortune-telling guide, but which actually is a text about surfing reality. It's about the text that is based on this deep understanding of reality as an ocean, as a symphony, you know, as a constantly pulsing rhythmic dance that is really at the very heart of the Shakta tradition. So what we're doing here and what we're going to explore here is the intimate connection between the inner energy of your own consciousness, your own mind and heart and body, and the world, the energy of the world around you. And it's a skill that many of us actually learn when we're surfing on the ocean, when we're riding waves. Or for me, I've learned it really through driving in traffic, you know, through learning to surf traffic, to flow into openings, to gauge distances, to know on that instinctive level where the openings are, what to move towards and what to avoid. So the practical application of the Spandakarikas is very much the ability to flow in life. But truly, this is a text that's for liberation, that exists for liberation. And in the verses that we are actually going to be looking at a little bit tonight, especially the first verse, the core intention that's set out in this verse is to tune ourselves into the non-dual, to actually start to recognize that the vastness of the consciousness, the awareness, the total intimate energy that underlies experience is not different than our own consciousness. And to learn how to really find and practice with those doorways into the great consciousness that are constantly presenting themselves to us. So I just want to spend a couple of minutes giving you the kind of housekeeping of this class. These weekly courses, these weekly meetings on Wednesdays, which of course for many of you are, some of you are here live, quite a few of you are here live, and many others are taking the class later via the miracle of the MP3 downloads. So the course will include these two-hour meetings, and during these meetings I'll speak, we'll meditate quite a bit, we'll have some sharing, some Q&A, some contemplation practices, and you'll then receive homework, which will come in the form of a sheet of practices, which you're welcome to delve into as deeply as you want to, and also, you know, as, in the most basic way, I'll give you a core practice that I would very much encourage you to do daily, which will consist of a meditation that you do for 15 or 20 minutes. But there will also be a lot of open-eyed practices, what I call walking around practices, which are ways of cultivating the awareness that we're tuning into during activity. And for me, and I know for those of you who've practiced with me, especially practicing tantric Shaivism in a class like this, it's actually these open-eyed practices that really change the way you're experiencing your life. There's something about applying these teachings on the hoof, as it were, off the mat, that really allows them to open up for you. And there's one more option that some of you might like to explore, and that is the option of meeting weekly on the phone with a study partner. If you know, in the welcome letter that you got, we suggested that those of you who want a study partner should let Deb know, and she'll match you up with someone. And I would add one more piece. There's, of course, several different ways to work with your partner, and which you might agree on with your partner. One would be to actually study, that is to work with the text and with the commentaries and the explanations that I'll make available to you. And the other is to have a much more experientially based conversation. For most people, there's a combination of both. But it's, you know, completely great to have a practice buddy, a study partner, who just helps you track the experience of what it's like working with this class and what's happening in your life, what's changing in your life, what confusions, what openings, what revelations you're having. So it's having a partner is a great way of really augmenting your experience here. And I know some of you are taking the class with, you know, your live-in beloved or roommate or your study group or your friend, so that's going to happen naturally. So we're going to begin with our first meditation and the first of our mantras. And the mantras we'll open with are familiar to many of you from our goddess courses. They are the mantras that invoke the underlying powers of Shakti, of Spanda. Spanda, meaning vibration or pulsation, is one of the names for the primordial creative pulsation that is actually doing our life. so these mantras mostly consist of seed syllables or bija mantras. Bija just means seed in Sanskrit. And seed syllables are pithy nuggets of sound that are actually used to call forth energies in the surrounding field, which in our case is this whole virtual field we're creating, but also inside our bodies. Very often when we chant them, especially if we're studying goddess forms, we relate the mantras to specific personal forms of Shakti, specific personal forms of goddess. In this class, we're practicing not so much with the forms, but with the actual energies that the forms personify, and ultimately with the one energy, which is actually the ocean that of which all of us, or within which all of us and all that is, are waves. So what these mantras invoke and what I'd like to suggest that we hold as an intention as we chant them is that what we're wanting to call forth are the energies that manifest through every particle of the known and unknown worlds, including our own bodies and minds, with the intention of asking that inner power, the Spanda Shakti at the heart of reality, to reveal herself to us as the pulsation within all embodied experience, within breath, within awareness, and as the intuition that unlocks divine presence within ourselves and within our relationship to each other and to the world. So essentially we're asking her to show us the concealed sacred presence that we call Spanda Shakti. And again, a brief reminder about the syllables. If you downloaded the mantra sheet that you were sent today on the website, it's on the private area of the website, and you happen to have it handy, these are the sheet of mantras, the mantras for class one. And this particular mantra is Om Aim Rim Klim Chamundaye Viche Swaha. And if you look at the invocation, at the translation, you'll see that Om, in this particular instance, calls forth the sacred vibratory essences at the heart of reality, the pure stillness of being within which all becoming manifests. So we're invoking Om as our connection to this stillness. We're invoking Aim, the seed syllable Aim, as the creative resonance that manifests as insight, wisdom, imagination, sacred sound. We're calling Rim as the Shakti that ceaselessly manifests different layers of reality and that spreads the power of love, which is really the heart of what Shakti is, through the different layers of reality. Klim invokes the power of allurement, the divine pleasure, the blissfulness, the fundamental erotic quality that is the essence of the impulse to manifest. Chamundaye Viche asks that all obstructions to wisdom be cut away. And Swaha is the great mantra of offering, in which we offer our concepts about reality, our obstructions, our hesitations, our difficulties into the great heart of awareness itself, asking that our body and mind reveal the intrinsic power and sacredness of who we are at our core. So as we chant, and we're going to chant the mantras five times, we'll create the intention to allow ourselves to open to and actually be penetrated by the Shakti in these syllables. And for me, the real secret of chanting in this fashion is to feel the syllables of the mantra as energetic resonances that for most of us are most easily felt by tuning ourselves initially into the space behind the breastbone, into the center of the chest. So just begin by closing your eyes and feeling the breath flowing and the way in which the breath in its natural flow tends to begin to come through the nostrils and bring your awareness into the area behind the breastbone. And see if you can, for the moment, just center your attention there. And as we chant, we'll allow the mantras to penetrate and reverberate energetically, because what these syllables really are is little vortexes, little magic Japanese flowers of energy that as they start to impact us energetically can begin to open up the knots of the day, the knots of our worries, our problems, our issues, our distractions, and just tune us into Shakti herself. So we'll chant once very slowly, and then a little faster as you tune in and chant with me. Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundaye Viche Swaha. 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 Last one. Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundaye Viche Swaha. So if you haven't already, find your posture, find yourself in a posture that feels natural and easy and also somewhat upright. This is a meditation that you can do while you're walking if you happen to be listening through the MP3. But for those of us who are sitting, as you know, attuning to the relationship of the buttocks to the seat, to the chair or the cushion is very helpful. Feeling how the body is supported by the seat. Letting the breath bring your awareness to the base of the posture and letting the body become heavier. And allowing the exhalation to gently flow your spinal column upward from the base through the crown while your shoulder blades melt onto the back and the chest just slightly lifts and opens. And we'll begin by just becoming aware of the sensations at the edge of your body. Notice how it feels in that place where your body meets your clothes. The slight frisson of energy that you experience as sensation, where the clothes meet the skin, where the face meets the air, where the buttocks, the thighs meet the seat. See if you can focus purely on these sensations, experiencing the felt sense of sensation without your usual mental picture of the body. Just see if you can let go of that image that you have, that we all carry, of our body, and just feel the sensations at the very edge of that place where your body interacts with the air or the seat or your clothes. Some of the sensations may feel like pressure or like tingling. Some may feel ticklish, others kind of soft. There might be sensations that you would normally label as tight or tense. But instead of naming them or trying to move towards some and away from others, just see if you can let your awareness be present with all the sensations as they arise, as your attention flows between sensations inside and on the edges of your body. Now let your breath very softly deepen. And this is a subtle practice of deepening the breath, because you're not going to try to take a deep breath. Instead, you're going to see if you can allow yourself to feel the body opening to receive the breath, as you would in deep sleep. So the feeling is that the breath is actually flowing from a source that is not inside the body. It's not your body, your lungs, taking a breath. It's the allowing of breath to breathe you, allowing the life force of the universe to breathe you. So the experience is more of becoming present to what is really happening as the breath flows naturally on its own. So as you settle into being breathed, have the sense that the impulse to breathe is actually coming from the area, the space in front of your body. The breath is flowing into your body through the whole front of the body, through the skin, not just through the nostrils, but flowing as though every pore of your body is a receptor for breath. See if you can notice the sensation, the very subtle sensation of life force flowing through the front of your body. As if every pore of your body is opening to receive the breath from the region in front of what you call you, your body in space. And begin to sense the breath flowing into the body from behind. So the back of the body opens to receive the breath. Some of you may notice that it's more natural and comfortable to feel the breath flowing from in front. Some of you may have a surprising sense of what it feels like to actually open to the breath from behind, letting it flow through every pore of the back body. And as thoughts arise, whether they're random thoughts or thoughts like, is this really possible, or I'm not getting it, or what am I supposed to be doing? Just notice them as thought and have the intention to open to breath flowing into you from behind. Now begin to sense that the breath is flowing into your body from all sides, from the front, from behind, through the side body on the right and left. Even from above you and below you. So the body is being breathed by the force of Shakti, the force of the prana Shakti, the life force energy that naturally flows through the air around you. And opens you to itself. See if you can feel as you open to the breath that your body itself begins to open, as though the sensations at the edges of your body are softening, releasing the feeling of there being a border between yourself and the air. So that breath begins to flow from the spaciousness around you into an expanding spaciousness within what you normally call your body. Allow yourself to be breathed by this space so that you breathe the spaciousness through the pores of the skin, so that the body opens in this dance in which breath is actually making love to the inner body. Become aware of how the movements, the flow of breath, have an innately pleasurable, even ecstatic quality. Your focus here is on allowing the body to open to the breath, which arises like a subtle lover from the air around you. Entering and opening your body from all sides. Perhaps starting to dissolve layers of contraction. Perhaps melting tension. Noticing that if there's an area of the body that feels uncomfortable, you can let yourself feel into the sensation there and allow the breath to enter it. Not with the intention of getting rid of tension or tightness, but simply with the intention of letting that power within the air, that power within the universe, that fundamental breath, open up areas of contraction. And then see if for a moment or two you can simultaneously become aware of that quality, that subtle, aware knowingness, which is present to all of this, which is present to the breath, to the sensations, even to the thoughts that arise, to the sound of my voice. And you can open your eyes, or not. And I want to just point out that this meditation that we've just done is a really fundamental tantric practice. You know, there are several kinds of tantra. Many tantric practices are kind of exotic. You know, they involve chakras and colors and deities and various, you know, kind of complex practices. The meditations in this particular, let's call it branch of Tantra, are really aimed at getting us to look at our normal experience of body, breath, and mind and recognize it, or recognize them as connections to the greater body that is the universe, the greater mind that is the wholeness, and the greater breath, which is Shakti, life force herself. In some modern tantric traditions that I have found very helpful, rather than looking at reality as in the way that we're going to describe, because we're going to go into the text and it's kind of technical, it's technical teachings. But another way of looking at the fundamentals of reality is as those aspects of the universal consciousness which manifest subtly inside every individual as the breath and as awareness. And the breath is that which we call Shakti or Spanda, the feminine active dynamic principle, and awareness is that unchanging stillness that in Tantra is called Shiva, Shiva meaning that which underlies. So, you know, these extremely vast and perhaps fundamentally exotic principles that we in the tradition study under their Sanskrit names are actually to be experienced as the very normal, cozy breath and awareness that are really the basic components of our humanness. The aspects of human existence that are so foundational that they are present even in deep sleep, even in states of unconsciousness, and certainly are the two most powerful and immediate ways for us to tune back into our core self, to our deep self, even in the midst of enormous stress and activity and busyness. This meditation actually is one of the ways, it's one of the modalities for turning off the default mode network, which, as many of you know, is an aspect of our neurological wiring that whose job is to condense or limit, contract our sense of identity so that we experience ourselves as only existing inside the physical body and in a particular time and place. And the default mode network, in other words, is that very useful mechanism that keeps us from bumping into things and getting confused about, you know, whether you're Sandra or Karen. But it's also the source of our daily experience of default separation. It's the mechanism that keeps us from recognizing our fundamental interconnectedness and interpenetration. So part of freeing ourselves from contraction and the process of self-realization is to learn how to turn off the default mode network wiring. And as we do this, the sense of, you know, of intense and rigid borders between ourselves and the world around us become less, not in a scary, vulnerable way, but in a very natural way. So we're able to recognize that we're not limited by the body, and at the same time to kind of skillfully move in and out of expansive awareness at will so that we can become well-boundaried when necessary and open when that's viable and appropriate. So one of the basic teachings of the Spandakarakas is the fluidity, the dancing quality, the rhythmic nature of all experience. The fact that reality is always in a state of pulsation and that pulsation inevitably leads us into the heart of experience. So this innately flowing, pulsing, expansive, and contractive energy at the heart of experience is what we call Spanda. Spanda has the same root as the word expansion and as spandex, which appropriately enough is the secret at the heart of stretchy yoga and fitness clothing, long before astrophysicists discovered the fact that the universe expands and before they came to realize that how much of the universe is made of dark matter and dark energy, and before they discovered that the gravitational waves that arise out of black holes, the sages of this tradition recognized through their internal investigations that the physical, mental, and emotional universe arises and subsides out of a single non-physical source which pulsates like a vast heart. You know how the heart beats, the heart rhythm, if you actually tune into it, really moves like a vibratory wave, like the ripples in a pond. It flows out and pulls back. And, you know, as you really tune into the pulse, you begin to feel as though the feeling of pulsation is arising and subsiding out of a kind of mysterious still point. And if you'd like to put your hands on your wrist, or I like to do it on the side of my neck, that seems to be the easiest place to find the pulse. And just tune into the rhythm of pulsation, the rhythm of the pulse. And as you tune into it, recognize that even though all of our pulses do not move in the same rhythm, obviously we have different pulse rates, and yet the fundamental movement of the pulse is the same. It's da-dum, da-dum, da-dum. It's flowing it's flowing out into beat and flowing back into stillness, flowing out into beat and flowing back into stillness. And this principle of reality as pulsation is the fundamental principle behind the Spandakarikas. One of the basic insights of the Spandakarikas is that reality is actually circular. In other words, you know, in the West we tend to think of reality as a kind of linear progression. Hopefully an evolutionary progression that is taking us into greater and greater layers of levels of consciousness. But in any case, it's a progression. You know, time moves forward. But Tantra experiences reality as spherical, not linear. In other words, reality is a circle, not a line, even though there are lines in reality. The circle is constantly moving back in on itself, really like a spiral. So everything is constantly arising out of one place and then returning to that one place. For example, emotions, thoughts come out of consciousness and return to it. And we're going to investigate that in a few minutes. Movement arises out of stillness and returns to it. Sound arises out of silence and returns to it. So there's this basic recognition that we come to that everything that moves, everything that occurs, is always arising out of this one vast undulating source, this deep vibration. Everything emanating from one place. That is the basic tantric awareness. And so we're going to, before we continue and go into our next little explanation and meditation, we're going to chant the first verse of the Spandakarikas. And those of you who have the full text, I've given you a printout of the full Sanskrit text with four different translations, partly because the books are expensive and partly because it's interesting to see the different ways in which different translators express the Sanskrit. What you might notice as you look at the verses, if you have had a chance to look at the verses, is that they are stanzas. It's a song. You know, they rhyme. They have rhythm and meter, and they can actually be sung. So one of the ways in which we can imbibe the Spandakarikas is by singing the verses. And we're going to do that now, or I'm going to do it. And those of you who would like to chant along can chant along. There is on the private area of the listserv an audio recording of these verses being chanted. It was actually a recording that was made by one of my students a few years ago, so that those who are interested in chanting these verses can, you know, chant along with the tune. It's kind of an amazing practice if you're drawn to it. But we're going to chant these verses three times. I'll say them out loud, and if you don't have the text with you, you can just listen. But I'm going to say them to give you a rough idea of the pronunciation, and then we'll chant them a couple of times. And then I'm going to just talk a little bit about the very subtle implications inside this one verse. This is an invocation, which means that it both asks for the presence of the forms of divine energy that are discussed in the verse, essentially asks for grace, but it also contains the fundamental teaching that the whole rest of the text is going to expound. And because in Sanskrit texts, the the meat, so to speak, of the teaching is encoded in a very succinct nugget-like form. The verses need explanation, they need commentary. And it's in those commentaries that we actually begin to receive the wisdom of the different teachers of the tradition, some of which is extremely radical. And part of what we're going to do in this class is look at some of these very radical teachings and how they, because this is really the most important thing for us, how they apply, how they illumine our experience. So the meaning of this first verse is, we praise that Shankara. Shankara is one of the names of the divine masculine, or the stillness aspect of consciousness, who is the source of the power of the Shaktis, by whose expansion and contraction the universe is absorbed and comes into being. And I'm going to unpack this a little bit after we've chanted. So the Sanskrit goes, Yashyon Mesha Nimesha Bhyam Jagata Pralayodayau Tam Shakti Chakra Vibhava Prabhavam Shankaram Stumaha. Yashyon Mesha Nimesha Bhyam Jagata Pralayodayau Tam Shakti Chakra Vibhava Prabhavam Shankaram Stumaha. And again, Yasyon Mesha Nimesha Pyam Jagata Pralayodayau Tam Shakti Chakra Vibhava Prabhavam Shankaram Stumaha. And a third time, because three times is auspicious. Yasyon Mesha Nimesha Pyam Jagata Pralayodayau Tam Shakti Chakra Vibhava Prabhavam Shankaram Stumaha. So these are the meanings of the verses. And I'm going to give you a slightly different version of the commentary, which comes from a 10th century sage named Kshemaraja, who wrote an extraordinary commentary on this text called the Spanda Nirnaya. We praise that Shankara by whose mere opening and shutting of the eyelids there is the appearance and dissolution of the world, and who is the source of the glorious powers of the collective whole of Shaktis, the energies that are responsible for the appearance and dissolution of the world. So the name Shankara comes from the root Sham, which means grace, literally the grace, the blessing that allows a spiritual seeker to recognize the vast expanse of one's own consciousness, which is not different from the consciousness of that which we call God or Source or the Absolute or Brahman, which is in essence our own consciousness, which is non-dual, which is only one, and which is the highest bliss. And Kshemaraja says that recognition calms the heat of all our difficulties. Once we realize that everything is arising and subsiding inside one consciousness, which is our consciousness, which is our essential nature, life suddenly begins to make sense, even when it's difficult. And Kshemaraja then goes on to say the meaning of praise, we praise that one. The meaning of praise means that when we consider that vast consciousness as being greater than the entire universe, we open ourselves to enter into the being of that vastness. So this practice that we did, this meditation that we did, where we begin to experience ourselves as being breathed by the universe, as being made love to by the universe, is actually one of the preliminary practices for recognizing that we are surrounded, that we are held, that we are embraced, and that we are part of this one vast oceanic consciousness. And Kshema Raja goes on to say that we enter into his being, and I really love this phrase, by obliterating the state of assumed agency that he has brought about in us. In other words, the state of assumed agency, of course, refers to the personal ego. But what this commentator says is that the personal ego is not something that we've invented. It's something that the vastness of consciousness has assumed, has covered itself with, for the purposes of experiencing this diverse world. So this idea that, you know, that you and I are individual doers, that I'm giving this talk and that you're listening to it, that we're separate from each other and everything else, has actually been, so to speak, created or put in place by this one consciousness encoded in our brain, supposedly in the left hemisphere of the brain, which tends to see particulars while the right hemisphere tends to see wholeness. So this sense of being the agent of our actions, the doer of our actions, without being able to recognize that the true agent is the life force itself, that, in other words, that we don't breathe, that we are breathed, that we don't speak, that speaking happens through our vocal cords. This assumed sense of agency is what is known in the tradition as egoic consciousness. And the trick in Tantra is to recognize that we are not the doers of our actions, while being able to act effectively from that position. So one of the ways we begin to hold this awareness is to really allow ourselves, whenever we can manage to experience it, allow ourselves to be breathed. Because when we can let ourselves be breathed, when we can feel ourselves being breathed, in other words, feel the life force moving through us, then we begin to experience that deep relaxation of tension, which is the essential movement into what Tantra calls egolessness. So egolessness in Tantra is not, you know, kind of becoming a slave to a divine master. It's actually recognizing that this greatness is acting through you as you. That what you think of as your own life is a greater life that is being lived. It's very much like that popular New Age phrase, you're a spiritual being having a human experience. Or to put it in tantric terms, you are consciousness. Call it God, if you will, having a human experience. So Kshema Raja says this text is going to teach us that entrance into this great presence known as Shankara is the true gift of liberation, becoming one with consciousness, which is in Sanskrit is called samavesha, literally recognizing your sameness with the divine, your sameness with divine awareness, is what is liberation, what is the purpose of practicing this text. So, in praising, and the word that's used in Sanskrit, stumaha, is a plural, so it's not I praise that great consciousness, we praise that consciousness. And in other words, we're part of the movement of consciousness to recognize itself through all of us, which is one reason why the practice of studying these texts and meditating on these texts together is so powerful. So, Kshema Raja then goes on to say, and this is a kind of is a metaphor that's not that uncommon, although the way it's said here is kind of counterintuitive. So the verse says, we praise that one who, by whose mere opening of the eyelids the world appears, the world manifests, and by closing his eyes the world disappears. So that reality, that great ocean of consciousness, which is constantly resting in itself, has this fundamental gesture of manifesting a diverse universes simply by opening its eyes, so to speak, and of reabsorbing universes by closing its eyes. And I want to, you know, before we go into that, I want to just spend a moment or two talking about this process, this basic teaching that we're working with, that we're going to be working with throughout these weeks together, just giving you the foundational overview of the tantric metaphysics, just so that we understand what it is we're working with. I know that many of you know this teaching, and for those of you who've heard it before, let's look at it as really a poetic practice for returning ourselves to the awareness of what our greater wholeness really is. So in other words, what I'm giving you is not information that you hear once or twice and then go, okay, I know this. What this really is an invitation to a deeper form of recognition of what your own awareness really is. Because the process of internalizing this teaching, of assimilating this teaching, is something that happens with repeated contemplation, meditation, and also hearing. So here's the basic sort of fundamental understanding of tantric monism. You know, Tantra is a monistic tradition as opposed to a monotheistic one. And, of course, this is a very important distinction because the core recognition of the monistic traditions is that there is really nothing outside the divine sacredness at the heart of reality. And, you know, we make jokes about this divine sacredness. You know, what's that joke? What did the Dalai Lama say to the hot dog vendor? Make me one with everything. You know, this is something that most of us who've studied meditation or read spiritual literature in the modern world, we understand this intellectually. Okay, everything is one. Everything is consciousness. We've heard it a million times. We don't necessarily experience it. And that's why we're here studying this Pandakarkas. So the tantric understanding is that everything that exists and everything that doesn't exist, inside the molecules of reality of our body and the physical world, the utter absolute sacredness of consciousness exists as the molecules, the space inside the atoms and molecules of our body, as the expansive, or let's say expansive capable experience of our own mind. So the physical world is not some lesser or impure stepchild of sacred transcendent reality. It's no less sacred than the source from which it constantly arises and subsides. And this is actually a very significant teaching and actually quite unusual in the spiritual world. For example, if you don't mind my getting into Indian philosophy for a moment. If you've studied Vedanta, or what's called Advaita, in one of the modern so-called direct path traditions, or in many Buddhist traditions, you know that there is a basic practice for deconstructing our thoughts and our stories and recognizing ourselves as that consciousness which is aware of them. And we do it by saying, okay, I feel my body, but I'm not my body because I'm aware of my body. I experience the breath, but I'm not my breath because I'm aware of the breath. I experience my thoughts, so I'm not my thoughts because I'm aware of the thoughts. What am I beyond the body, beyond the breath, beyond the thoughts, and beyond the outside world? And that's the practice is, it's in Sanskrit, it's called the practice of neti neti, of deconstruction. I'm not this, I'm not that. What is it that remains when all this dissolves? It is that pure consciousness that is empty, that's formless, that's completely free of the body and the world and everything else. So this is traditional non-dual consciousness, especially in the Vedantic or Advaita Vedantic tradition and in many forms of Buddhism, that reality is empty. And of course, the great sages define emptiness not as nothingness, but as a kind of empty fullness. But Tantra goes one step further. Tantra says, okay, yes, let us deconstruct our stories about reality. Let us see through the illusion that we're limited by the body. But once we have done that, then what we need to do is recognize that that same sacred consciousness is also in the body. It's also in the physical world. It's also in everyone and everything in our life. It's in as much in our negative thoughts as it is in our positive thoughts, which doesn't mean that in the relative world there's no such thing as, good and bad. So tantric awareness is not an excuse for acting inappropriately or unjustly. It's simply the deepest recognition possible of the fact that on the most fundamental level, we are waves in the ocean of reality, notes in the grand symphony of reality. And, through these metaphors can sort of start to understand that the wave arises in the ocean, subsides back into the ocean, but is never separate from the ocean, that the notes arise from silence and merge back into silence, but are never separate from the silence. That flames arise from fire and merge back into fire, and if you watch carefully, you can see them doing that, but are not other than fire. And in a more immediate way, thoughts, emotions, and sensations originate in something subtle and still and mysterious and disappear into that. So when we really follow that understanding, we realize that our existence as separate selves is constantly arising from and subsiding back into the ocean of pure awareness, but that the pure awareness and energy that is most deeply realized in meditative silence is also fully present in activity, whether it's pleasurable activity or painful activity, whether it's joyful or agitated. So the tantric universe, the Spanda teaching, tells us that everything is made of sacred awareness, which has two fundamental aspects or modes. It's both being, that is still unmoving sourceness, and becoming, constantly creating, changing, dynamically quivering. And again, as most of you know, on the cosmic level, the beingness of reality, the still side, the foundation, is personified as Shiva, who of course is also the deity of proto-religions in Asia and the Middle East, the deity with snakes and tiger skins and often seen sitting in meditation or doing that amazing Tandava dance that you see in the statues of Nataraja. And the dynamic quality of reality is Shakti, meaning power. And just as Shakti is personified in many different goddess forms and many different archetypal powers in life, in our human experience and in the natural world, according to Tantra, Shakti takes the form of all the different energies that make things happen in the world that are called the Shakti Chakras or the Wheel of Shaktis. And these powers are directly responsible for the manifestation, maintenance, and dissolution of every moment in time. So when we study and practice the Spandakarika's teaching, what we're learning to do is start to recognize the way in which our experience spirals out from this source and how this very spiraling, which we experience as thoughts, as breath, as movement, is always arising and subsiding back in the same place, which is the place of the spanda, the fundamental pulsing, dancing quality of reality, which is the inseparable power aspect of beingness. So I want to just tune into this in the way that I've found to be most powerful and helpful for me in understanding what it really means to experience Spanda as myself. And that is to look at the way thoughts arise and subside in the mind. So I'd like to ask you to just find yourself a posture that's comfortable and upright. And to be present with the breath. To notice how, whether the breath is deep or shallow, it is actually always experienced as a pulsation. There's inhalation and there's exhalation. And if you really follow the breath, the inhalation brings your awareness into the body, the exhalation draws your awareness out of the body. But it's essentially the movement of opening in and opening out, taking in and offering back. Giving and receiving. And you may notice also that if you really follow the breath, if you really stay with the breath with full mindful attention, not too tight, just attentive enough to actually find where the breath begins and ends. What you start to notice is that breath arises out of apparently nothing. Breath moves and then it dissolves somewhere inside. It moves and then it dissolves somewhere outside. And tantric meditation techniques can actually help you measure where the breath dissolves inside and outside. But the point is that this most foundational act of life is constantly arising out of stillness, moving and subsiding back into stillness, like a pendulum. And in the same way, and this is where we want to go now, thoughts are doing the same thing. So right now, your eyes are closed. You're aware of the breath. Perhaps you're following the breath as it arises and subsides, this very, very simple, very basic meditation, which is also a fundamental doorway into the heart of our connection to reality. So, what is aware of the breath? What is it that's able to know the breath? So just as the breath moves, and that just as there is something inside consciousness that knows this, in the same way you may notice, and I know you notice, but at least if you're anything like me, a lot of this process goes on without your being conscious of it. So see if you can, in the process of, as it were, looking for what is aware of the breath, see if you can start to notice how it is that thoughts, images, and feelings actually dart up inside the field of your inner consciousness, emerging as different kinds of sensations, sentences, images. And if you just let yourself notice how there is this kind of ceaseless flow of thoughts, images. And if there aren't thoughts, there is probably a series of ripples of movement. That they are rising and falling without you actually intentionally thinking. Just as breath is arising and subsiding on its own without you having to do it, just as the heartbeat is arising and subsiding on its own. Movement is going on that subtler level of self that we call mind. And regardless of the content, that movement pretty much doesn't stop. See if you can let yourself be present to the field of your own awareness, within which thoughts arise and subside, whether in the form of words or images or simply the sense of movement. It's good to do this with your eyes closed. So again, thoughts, movements, images are arising and subsiding inside the inner field of your consciousness. And if you're like most of us, there's an automatic tendency to identify yourself with those thoughts so that it's very hard to see the screen on which they're appearing. That unknown, unseen impulse that's ceaselessly making thoughts arise in the mind while and then dissolve. That is the force of the spanda. That is the creative power of spanda manifesting as your mind. So again, just keep turning your awareness back on itself. See if you can sense your way into the suchness, the field within which thoughts and images are appearing. See if you can tune into the place from which a thought arises and into which it subsides. So there is that pulsation that is manifesting in the form of thoughts, which is literally creating the world inside your awareness, the world of thoughts and images. And there's also the capacity for seeing that, for knowing that. Power within the field of your consciousness manifests as worlds of inner experience, powered by the conditioning, powered by what's happened in the so-called outside world today. These thoughts and ideas keep arising and dissolving and arising and dissolving through a power over which most of us have no control. And at the same time, there's this capacity inside the field of consciousness for seeing that, for observing that, for knowing that thoughts are arising, for knowing that among those thoughts that are arising and subsiding, there's one foundational thought which is constantly manifesting as the tendency to identify with the contents of the mind. The I am thinking thought, the I am squirming thought, the I am existing thought. So the thoughts are arising, among them the what's often called the I thought. But beyond the experience of the thoughts arising, there's an awareness that's noticing, that's present to the movement in the mind. And the more stillness there is in the body, and the more interning the mind becomes, the more it becomes possible to feel your way into that awareing that is actually holding the thoughts, that is the field within which the thoughts are arising and subsiding. Can you sense that? Can you sense how mind itself, consciousness itself, is the substance and indeed the screen within which thoughts and perceptions are appearing, and within which the experience of breath is being felt arising and subsiding? So your job here is to feel both, to feel the unstoppable dance of life as thinking, image making, movement in the inner field, movement of breath, movement of sensation. And also to feel the freedom of that knowing awareness that literally holds, contains and is present to whatever is arising inside it. And which is naturally expansive, which is free, which is actually completely unaffected by whatever is arising inside it. See if as you segue into the next phase of this conversation. See if you can keep your awareness noticing thoughts as they arise, as arisings, and also attuned to that really subtle field of awareing that is both the ground and the observer is not really the right word, but the knower of whatever is arising and subsiding. And you know, when we talk about being conscious, as we so often do these days, what we're really talking about on the deepest level is being consciously in touch with that naturally aware faculty that is always present, even when we're distracted or angry or anxious. Which is non-judgmentally, naturally holding and experiencing our life. So I would like to ask you to, those of you who feel comfortable and ready to do this and have something to say, this is a moment when you can say what you're experiencing or not experiencing, or you can ask a question that's come up. And if you want to do that, you can press *7 and speak into your phone, and we'll hear you. So if anyone would like to talk or ask a question or share your experience.
Hi.
Hi. Can you tell us your name?
Hey. Hi, this is Eva.
Hello, Eva.
Hi.
Hi.
So what was really experiencing movement. As I sort of settled in, there were thoughts, but then there was also just a very subtle movement as I sort of did the best I could to feel into the space from which the movement and the thoughts were arising and falling,
yeah.
And that was just really beautiful, so thank you.
It's very beautiful, isn't it? The experience of, I call it spunda straight. like the thoughts and the images are sort of the effect, but tuning into that space out of which they come, just it tunes you right into the kind of ecstatic urgency of Spanda. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Anyone else? *7.
Hello.
Hello.
Sally?
Hello. Yes, I'm here.
Okay, this is Marilyn.
Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. I love what you were doing tonight. But I really have difficulty with capturing thoughts until they're gone, and then I can say, there it was. You know, I can't seem to ever be there at the moment when they arise at all, you know, or leave. It's just, I don't have that trouble with the breath sensation, but with the thoughts, it was really difficult.
Well, let me give you a trick, and we're actually going to practice this in the future, which is to create a thought. You know, for example, create the thought, I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you know, or you can work with another mantra, but let's say I am, and
mm-hmm.
everyone else can do that as well. So just introduce the thought, I am, and notice, because you're doing it consciously, even though there are all these other thoughts that are, you know, sort of drifting around, but just say I am to yourself a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
And then notice the space in the mind that you experience when I am dissolves. It's easier to find it with when the thought at the end of the thought than at the beginning. So where, what is that space into which I am dissolves? Can you find it? Can you feel it?
Yeah, I can find that. Yeah.
So that's
real,
so that's how. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go on.
It feels like, you know, like a voice almost disappearing quietly. You know, just going out quietly. That's how it feels. Yeah.
It's like a sound dissolving into silence, right? It's like.
Yes. That's what I was trying to say. Yes.
Yeah. So that's how you do this. In, you know, as a deliberate practice, and I'm going to ask you guys to do this in meditation because it's actually, if you don't mind my using this word, it's literally far out and far in to start to tune into that space at the end of thought. It's a doorway into pure awareness or pure spanda. So, and for most of us, it's hard to actually find it in the normal train of thought, especially when there's nobody guiding the meditation. But it's not so hard when you work with an actual word. And I like the I am thought because, you know, the spanda of our consciousness, of our individuated consciousness, is actually naturally describing I am this, I am that, I am tired, I am Marilyn, I am Sally, I am, you know, interested, I am bored. So the I am thought is a very natural thought.
Mm.
And when we make it a deliberate conscious mantra, but with the intention to tune into the space at the end of it, then the amazing miracle of what is actually the field of our own mind and the power that's the creative power that's, you know, that somehow out of nowhere is bringing up thoughts just begins to kind of merge back into its source.
Yeah. It feels like when you used to have us check the space between breaths.
Yes.
But it
yes.
was at the This is harder. This is harder. Yeah. I could do that with the breath, but yeah. Has that quality of space.
Yeah. This is subtler.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it's harder, but you'll catch the trick of it. And and it's, you know, just as finding the space between the breaths, you know, just on a practical level, you know, even when it's not opening up into what's really at the core of the breath, it actually settles the breath. It starts to dissolve the fear that so many of us have in the breath. So it has a lot of practical effects. You know, it takes us out of the sympathetic into the parasympathetic nervous system. This practice does the same thing. But when we are doing it is really with the intention of looking into what the mind is made of and beginning to become aware of that absolutely free consciousness, which is also the creative source of thoughts. It's tremendously transformative. So thank you for asking that question because I'm sure other people had the same question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Abby.
Yeah, you're welcome. Who is this? I hear another voice.
This is Wendy.
Hi, Wendy.
Hi. How are you, Sally? Really
How
nice
are you
to
tonight?
Hear your voice.
Yeah,
I'm just wondering if you could speak, and maybe I'm sort of premature here, and if I am, I'll wait until whatever week. But I'm really trying to understand this pulse in the meditation space. And I've had the gift of having that come up so strong. It's like being caught in a wave. And I know that there's a corollary to not having any thoughts interrupting that because I'm in this wave. And yet, like lately, it's pretty inaccessible. Or like it'll just come, and then it'll just go. And you know, I'm doing the mantra. I'm trying to do the breath. So I don't know. Maybe we're going to learn more about this pulse. Because there's times, even just in the day to day, that I feel that pulse coming up. And then recently, I just feel completely like I can't find that space anywhere. So, you know, I don't know, maybe that's what the whole point of this class is, and you're going to come to it, but anything you could say about that?
Yes, that is one of the main points of this class, and I can certainly speak to it now because it's, again, it's, so what is the pulse? And why is it that you're talking about the very subtle pulse within meditation that's kind of deeper than the heartbeat.
Except that sometimes it's not subtle at all. It's like actually like everywhere. It's like, you know, it's like healing my body. It's like moving through me in a way that it is really being breathed into me. And there's no room for any other thought actually in that gift, really. And I really wish I could have it back.
Well, you will have it back. I would say, first of all, what that pulse that you're experiencing I call it the signature of the awakened Shakti of meditation. You know, that the true tantric meditation is the entrance into the experience of the quivering, scintillating, pulsing, you know, ecstatic, overriding nature of consciousness itself, which, as you say, we can experience in the body, you know, in the physical body. We can experience inside the breath. We can experience inside the mind. And it's as we awaken, or as we are awakened more and more by the Spanda Shakti in the form of of liberating energy, which is what you're experiencing, you actually begin to feel how reality has a natural pulsation that is stronger, more powerful, more ecstatic, and is actually, my guru used to call it the pulse of meditation itself. So in other words, the meditative state, that is the state that occurs when meditation... Can you mute yourself for the moment? And then if you have more questions, unmute yourself again. So in other words, what we call true meditation or spontaneous meditation, natural meditation, is the work not of our mind and intention, although our mind and intention and practice are very important, but it's actually the emerging experience of that which is living our life, which for many of us, certainly true for me, one of the early and most palpable expressions of being meditated is the emergence of a sense of pulsation or vibration I think for you, Wendy, and certainly been true for me over the years, is kind of the signal that you're connected, that Shakti is connecting to you. And there just will be times when the sense of the pulsation becomes very faint, or when you're not feeling it. And usually, I'll tell you, there's several reasons why it happens. One is that it just sometimes happens when we're very busy and distracted, or when we haven't been turning inside so much. And there are times when, you know, actually the energy of the spanda, the energy of the pulsation, is working inside our tensions or obstructions in ways that actually cause our connection to it to feel as though it's disappeared. But what's actually happening is that it's working through some of the veils and tensions inside the inner body. This is the way Shakti practice works. We don't have control over its manifestations, even though, even though we practice with it and we learn to surf with it, and I will be speaking more about this, but what you're describing is both a gift of the energy that's awakening and working in you, and, you know, and also something that needs to be understood as having really its own timing and its own way of being present with you. So in my experience, any let's say manifestation that arises in meditation, whatever it is, whether it's stillness or, you know, what we might call a deep state, or the expansion of consciousness, or a vision, or any one of the myriad meditation experiences that allure us and attract us, and, you know, some of the experiences that aren't so attractive, they are all part of the way in which the Spanda Shakti is showing us the different layers of our being, and it's always going to change, because that really is the nature of our reality, our inner and outer reality. It's always changing, it's always shifting. It's sometimes exquisite and sometimes dull, and sometimes, you know, we find ourselves in a part of our consciousness that we've been avoiding for years and would rather not explore, but which is being presented to us, because by holding it in awareness, we actually free the little dragons in our consciousness to, you know, to dissolve and grow up and experience the fact that you know, that even the dark places are made of consciousness and light. So that's really the journey. There's expansion and contraction. And for you, the experience of contraction is the temporary disappearance of your sense of the pulsation. But I promise you, the expansion will occur again and it will come back.
Okay, thanks
for the question. Yeah, you're very welcome.
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, because I thought, you know, whatever, at the beginning it was so sweet. It was just always there. I didn't even have to wonder. So I guess that's normal.
Yeah.
And then
it's
actually,
completely
the more
normal.
The more you want it, the less it's there. That's the other truth.
Yes, well, yes. Well, you know, what they say about expectations and meditation, it's really true that the Shakti is free. So what we learn is how to invite her and then allow her to be what she is. So if you set an intention in your meditation that I'm sitting to be present with my full being, I know that Spanda Shakti is acting, is manifesting as my mind, as the experiences of my senses, as my meditation itself, and I'm open to however she wants to manifest, then in a certain sense you free her and you free yourself from expectation, and then the whole relationship becomes much sweeter.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, as you know, it's like with a lover, you know, if you start trying to push them to treat you in a certain way, chances are they'll react and, you know, become more distant or more moody or whatever it is that you don't like. So the Shakti is, you know, the Shakti is really always in a dance with your conditioning and always showing you the need for just being a little bit freer, a little bit more open, a little bit more aware. You know, this is the dance of, you know, really the inner guru. So,
yeah, thank you, Sally.
You're so welcome. Is there anyone else who has a question or a sharing or something you want to say about this kind of subtle process? Hello, who's this?
Oh, hello.
Hello.
It's Laura. How are you going?
Going well. How about you? Are you calling from Australia?
I am, and I was late, so I'm sorry about that.
Oh, no. Welcome.
Thank you. I just wondered when you start with, say, a concentrative practice, but then lots of really intense negative emotions come up, should you change tools and skip to some kind of an integrative tool, or stick with the mantra, or try and do both, or it doesn't really matter anyway?
Great question. What are you practicing?
I am really happy to talk to you. It's a real privilege because I use your CD with heart-focused meditation, but I also just practice Guru Maya's Om Namah Shivaya, to work with trauma mainly. And I just don't have very many tools other than the basic ones I've learned through guided and mantra, and just don't know if that I should just stick with that and feel it through, or whether there are another range of tools that would help integrate.
Yes, there are. So, one of the things that mantra does is literally, you know, especially a very powerful, empowered mantra, is it starts to dredge up the stuff that's kind of embedded in your subtle body. And, you know, mantra can help you concentrate. It can also bring up a lot of bliss and, you know, and other experiences. And it can create a kind of fire of purification. So, and especially if you're working with a lot of trauma, and if you're kind of sitting with the intention to work with the trauma, that, you know, that what can sometimes happen is that you get kind of caught in the story of the trauma, and in working with the mantra, and correct me if I'm wrong about this, I'm speaking about, you know, the way it sometimes happened for me and for other people I know who practice with mantra. Sometimes we can be sort of subconsciously using the mantra to kind of push away the trauma or to heal or cure the trauma, and there's a kind of a subtle intention around the mantra which tends to stop the process. You know, the process of transformation of consciousness is it needs a kind of relaxed awareness. And there are a couple of things that help here. One is to work with the mantra in an intensely focused, concentrative way, but rather to feel into the energy of the mantra and to almost to slur it, to let it kind of move inside your consciousness in a almost like a vibration rather than as words, and to feel that the area around the mantra is not something different from the mantra. So the more you can play with the mantra with a sense that the mantra is a form of energy and your inner consciousness is a form of energy and the thoughts and feelings that are coming up are also energy, the more the kind of secret shakti in the mantra will start to transform your consciousness. So the tool here is recognizing that whatever is arising inside your meditation is actually made of shakti, made of energy, made of consciousness, made of spanda, as we were saying, and to start to see what's happening in your meditation as a, you know, the way you would see if you were looking into the ocean, you would see the currents and the waves and the rivulets and the, you know, you would recognize them as a kind of mass of water in motion. Do you understand what I mean? So taking that attitude in your meditation actually allows the energy of trauma to move, which is what you want it to do. It's trauma energy is kind of highly dense, contracted energy. You just want to give it space to relax. Another way that I often work with little pockets of trauma is literally to imagine space around, you know, to feel where it is in my body, to imagine space around it, and to notice the edges of the dense feeling energy, and start to notice how the edges of the dense feeling trauma energy can begin to release and open into the spaciousness that you've imagined surrounding it. So, and it's literally, you know, we talk a lot about holding space. That is literally what holding space means. It's rather than letting your attention contract into the unpleasant feeling of the trauma energy or the anger or the fear or the tightness. You feel it as energy inside your body, but you also create space around it. And that practice I have found for myself and for many other people is very, very transformative. So experiencing the, you know, mantra as energy, recognizing thoughts as energy, creating space around the feelings of being stuck are very, very skillful ways of practicing energetically with what's coming up. So I would suggest, and the teaching of Spanda, you know, in its practical application, which we'll definitely go into more next week, the teaching of Spanda at its core tells us that everything that's going on in your inner and outer world is actually made of this same very creative, subtle energy, and that even when it feels extremely contracted and stuck and unpleasant, if you tune into it and recognize it as a dense form of energy which is capable of expanding and becoming more spacious, you'll start to feel the freedom, the energetic freedom that is possible. So, in other words, this teaching is in itself a tool for looking at your inner experience, not as something fixed, you know, not as something you're stuck with, but actually as an expression of an energy that wants to be free, and that is capable of literally reinventing itself if you give it the space to do that. Does that make sense? Do you understand what I'm talking about?
I understand. It makes good sense.
Right.
I need to find develop the skill to hold.
Well, so here's my suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
Ask yourself. Where are these unpleasant feelings? Where are they in my body? And allow them, you know, that, because that's what we tend to do, is tighten against it if it doesn't feel good. So just allow them. Just tell yourself, okay, it's okay if it's here. Is it okay if it's here? And find that place in yourself which can consent. And then once you've done that, feel the space that surrounds you and holds you. That's, you know, that's a space inside your body, the space around your body. I often, you know, when I teach goddess courses, I often suggest that people imagine that space as a very motherly form of the divine feminine, because for many of us, the feeling of being held by a subtle mother energy is very, very healing in itself. And just let yourself be held by that space and allowing the energy to be there without trying to make it go away. But recognizing that it is actually Shakti, it's creative energy, and the secret, which we hear and hear and hear, and then one day we realize, oh my God, it's really true, is that the energy of our own mind and body is in a constant process of creation. So it's, you know, so all we really have to do is to allow the possibility that by accepting what is going on, allowing it to be there and inviting it to shift, that it will recreate itself in a different form. So I'm just inviting you to try that. Feel it, allow it, create space around it, and then just be present with it and see what happens.
Thank you.
You can report on your experience and we'll see where we go from there, okay?
Thank you so much. Bye.
Oh, you're so welcome. So we have time for one more question and then we'll do a final meditation. And,
Sally.
Yes.
Sally, this is Phyllis.
Yes.
Hi,
Phyllis. How are you?
Oh, so glad to be in class. I had two questions, observations. One is, I wonder if there's a distinction between the Spanda and the Kundalini, or if they're exactly, if there is some kind of a distinction.
Well, Kundalini is a particular form of Spanda.
Okay.
And, you know, and again, we'll talk a little bit more about the technicalities of this next week, but Spanda is the name for the vibrating, pulsating, expansive and contraction quality at the heart of reality. And that quality in reality can manifest as physical, as the physical universe, and also as our contracted consciousness. And it also can manifest as the power that, you know, that unties the knots and expands our consciousness, and that moves in our subtle body to open up the extraordinary, you know, amazing wonders of the chakras and expand our mind. So that liberating aspect of Spanda, the aspect of Spanda that, so to speak, brings us home to the source, is what we call Kundalini.
Okay.
So they're not, it's not that they're different because there's only one Shakti, but it's a particular unique manifestation of Spanda.
Thanks. I kind of figured that, but I wanted to clarify it for myself. And
yes.
And the other, yes, the other question is, in the verses, I noticed that they say that when Shakti opens her eyes, the universe is reabsorbed.
Yes.
Yeah, and when she closes them, it's created. So I thought that was a little, I don't know, I wondered about that.
Yes.
It seemed to be the opposite.
Yes. I know, it's very counterintuitive. So, so what this verse says is that when Shakti, the phrase Shakti opens her eyes means that Shakti recognizes herself.
Oh.
In other words, you are Shakti.
Uh-huh.
Not you know, thinking that you're Phyllis, that is this, you know, person of a certain age with a certain history. So, and you know, and this world that seems so physical and hard and, you know, full of weird political situations, so in that state, the Shakti is said to have her eyes closed or to be asleep. When her eyes are open, she knows that within all this, there is only one brilliant, beautiful, quivering, pulsating light. So that's the meaning of the verse. It's kind of cool. It's an esoteric verse. We ordinarily think, okay, when the eyes are open, we see the world. When we close our eyes, the world's. But actually, when Sally open my eyes, I see the world. It's easier to experience subtle pulsations with my eyes closed. But that's because when you are experiencing yourself as a limited individual, you have to close your eyes to experience the subtle realms. But when you experience yourself as you are, you know, in your awake consciousness, the world dissolves and all you experience is yourself.
Wonderful. Thank
yeah,
you.
Beautiful.
That's beautiful.
You're so
yeah.
welcome. And thank you for asking the question. So we will just sit for a moment, and you'll be receiving a homework assignment. You'll also be receiving it. Actually, this will be on the private area of the website, a full commentary on the first verse, which those of you who really want to examine the verses will enjoy. It's not mandatory, but it's very interesting. It includes the commentary and my commentary on the commentary. So I'm suggesting that you do the daily meditation for 15 minutes or 20 minutes a day. And if you already have a meditation practice, of course, do your regular meditation practice. But I'm also going to suggest that you practice some of these open-eyed awarenesses. And one of them is to periodically look into your own thought stream and see if you can remember to recognize the awareing, the field of knowing that is really the basis of all your experience. And to do this open-eyed, and we're going to do this as our final meditation with open eyes. So as you look out at the room you're in, the place you're in now, and experience everything that's present here, which is what you can see of your own body, what is appearing in front of you, the landscape or the walls of the room or the art or the furniture, just let yourself see it. And then be aware that all of this is appearing inside the awareness that allows you to experience it. Even though your eyes are open and your consciousness is filled with physical objects, what is it that lets you have the experience of all this? So what is that awareing within which your whole waking state experience of this moment is appearing? And as you ask yourself that question, just let yourself be present to what arises. And those of you who, like Wendy, have a kind of felt experience of the natural pulsation of your own consciousness, you may become aware of the fact that the experience of sitting or walking through the world with a sense of what you see and taste and smell and think being held in a we'll call it a field, though it's much more subtle than a field, it's being held in a certain knowingness, a certain awareing. You will begin to experience the subtle pulsation, the subtle scintillation, which is Shakti, Spanda, making herself available to you, both as the subtle quality of knowingness and as the subtle experience of life movement itself. And I'd also like to suggest that as you walk through the next few days, whenever you remember, just look for pulsation in the world around you. Notice how the wind makes the trees pulsate, and how groups of people move in undulating waves. And if you're by the ocean, of course, that's a magnificent place to discover the pulsation, or inside your own heartbeat. Just see if you can tune into the quality of spanda that is actually manifesting in every single act and perception of your life. So have a beautiful week. And we'll speak with each other next Wednesday. And please remember the listserv. If you have questions or anything you'd like to share, it's a beautiful way to evoke answers to questions and be in conversation with each other. So I'm just so delighted to be with you here and to know that we're going to be together for more weeks, through more weeks, and also on the, in the etheric realms of our mutual meditation. So with great love, let's go into the evening. Namaste and good night.